Ta-da! Hey everyone, I am live. According to the computer on the screen thing, it says that I'm live. I've known that I'm live for quite a long time, although the legal system sometimes questions that. How are y'all doing today? So, this time we're going to go through some Land of Kimmage again. We're going to do Jeff's bit on Danny Jones. Everyone was saying last time that this was a better breakdown, and that makes sense. It's more recent, and I guess Danny did give him like a gajillion hours on there, right? Two, like 3 hour things. And so I figure it's probably a good place to start. Let him get his more recent deal out there. And as usual, we'll give it a couple minutes. Yell if there's an audio issue or something like that, or if I don't look as sexy as I normally do, which is possible. I mean, it's rough, but it's like quarterlies for a big business. It's like, you know, every quarter you have to, even if it's a great quarter, well, now you got to beat it the next one. And that's what it's like looking in the mirror every day, man. I'm just like, damn, I'm really going to have to beat that tomorrow. Holy shit. How am I going to do that? It's not a guest, this Karga. I'm just going through and doing a response type of thing. Just going to be playing Jeff's appearance on Danny Jones. I've had Jeff on before, and I'm going to have him on again. My intention is I haven't messaged him about it, but we follow each other and stuff. We're on good speaking terms, so I'm quite certain he'll be chill with coming on. But I wanted to go through so that this time I had a better idea. Last time I just listened to him talk about his position, and I took in a lot of it, but wasn't able to take it all in. Appreciate it all, everyone. Thanks for letting me know how the audio is and stuff. Yeah, I'm glad you made it on time. Woohoo. Yeah, we'll give it a few more minutes. Let some people trickle in. So I don't feel like, you know, everybody's... I know how it is when you show up for a live. You don't want to show up. You see the live thing, and it's 10 minutes from now. You're like, I'll be back in 10 minutes. Then you show up, it's 2 minutes late. You're like, ah, man, damn it, now I missed the beginning. So give them a couple minutes. Hey there, YouTube commenter. It says YouTube commenter, and I'm wondering after last time... this YouTube commenter with the ghost looking face or maybe a gas mask looking face. Is that you, Mike Forrest, right up here locally? Hey there, traveling fools. How you doing? I've had a few YouTube channels going through, like I'm looking at it right now through the interface through StreamYard. So sometimes it changes people's names and shit. It's weird. The internet's a crazy place. Hey, oh well, congratulations, Anafia. Oh man, that's worth putting on this. Oh, damn, that's worth putting on the screen right there. I'm cancer free. Just got the news. Congratulations, that's a huge deal. Oh, just an old YouTuber. Okay. Well then, Zanafia, my advice to you would be, you can stop your meth dealing lab now. Your whole ring. You don't need to get anybody shot. You don't need to mess with Tuco anymore. Ha ha ha, Breaking Bad reference for those of you who are uncultured swine. Coke is playing Switzerland in the World Cup now? Coke is playing Switzerland in the World Cup now? I didn't know Coke was a country. Is that South America? Which part of South America? Why is Danny Jones famous like he's BMX or a surfer turned podcaster? Well, I mean, that's a lot of what it is this real man kind of crap. It's like... a huge part of why people pay attention to me, I hear it a lot in person, is it, I'm a lot the same in person as I am on the internet. It's, you know, it's what makes Joe Rogan's got that everyman thing going. It's right. The questions he asks are the same question you could expect a dude at the grocery store to ask, right? It's nothing crazy. Coke, aka Colombia. Exactly. That's what I was saying. One of those countries down there where they have chainsaws. And all right. Anyway, we'll give it one more minute and 2:05. We'll get going. Oh, my alpha male idol. Jesus. You know, there's a lot of things that I've been called. Alpha male is not one of them. But, you know, I suppose if we're a desert island. No, the Tim guy's not here. I'm going to. No, he's not here. Sorry. We're just going to look at his video that was on Danny Jones, his interview on Danny Jones. Just kind of go through and discuss some of the points of it. As a matter of fact, it's probably a good time to just kind of get, we'll just go ahead and get started now. There's a little preface. For those of you who don't aware, since we looked at it a little bit last time, and I've looked a little bit into it, in my free time lately, When you're talking, Jeff's whole hypothesis in a nutshell is basically that the pyramids are, and some other structures in Egypt, were there to create different types of chemicals. These were used in fertilization. The goal around this was around crops. And the catalyst for chain reaction, for the chemical reactions, is usually electricity, piezoelectricity, or some other pressure caused by water. These are the things that you're usually going to see used as changes in pressure caused by water, I should say. Sometimes it'll be pressurizing, sometimes it'll be decreasing. But anyway, so it's all low-tech stuff. The electricity is either going to be from mostly from lightning. So anyway, we are going to, I think that's a basic, pretty good discussion of the theory, a pretty big base version of it. I mean, I don't want to get too terribly, his name is Drum. Christopher Dunn is the other guy. Am I storing facts in my beard for the Professor Dave debate? Yes, yes, I am. All right, let's go ahead and... I'm coming out, so you better get started.
Ammonia.
Whew. That's literally what it smells like inside the Red Pyramid.
Really?
Yeah.
You're just constantly 100% smelling salts?
And I've spent hours inside the Red Pyramid. And people try to say, bro, again, we should be rolling right now for this conversation.
What a great product idea for you, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
Red pyramid salts.
Smelling salts. Yeah.
Land of Chem. Yeah. Red pyramid salt. You can have a flavor for every pyramid.
Yeah.
God damn it. I hadn't watched this yet. This is, yeah, it's fucking ads right off the bat. Dwayne Elliott nails that way up. Fucking ads right off the bat. If you haven't even gotten started with the theory yet, you got a great idea. So check it out. You got some red pyramid smelling salts. Are you having a hard time keeping it up on a Friday night? Does your wife look a whole lot more like your mother-in-law? Well, guess what I've got for you? Red pyramid smelling salts. All right, carrying on.
But no, that's 100% what it smells like inside the Red Pyramid, which is pure chemical ammonia smell. Mm. Yeah, let me hit that one more time. Ow. All right, we'll blast off into outer space here as we kick off the recording.
Oh, God, I'll send you...
Well, this is the drawback of looking like myself, is that nobody offers me smelling salts or anything like that when I go on their podcast. They're probably just happy I walked in the door. Like, they're looking at me on social media the night before going, oh, Jesus fucking Christ. What time is this man going to bed? And I show up and they're like, oh, he made it. Hey, Dan, how's it going? Have a cup of coffee. Sit down. They don't offer me any smelling salts or anything fun. God damn it.
Somewhere.
Whoa.
Land of
makes my face tingle. Live in the building, ladies and gentlemen.
Welcome back,
the
Lord Joffrey.
Part two. Thank you, sir. My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me back on.
Yeah, my
all
pleasure,
the way
bro.
From Egypt.
Oh fuck,
we are back, baby, great. And we have a ton of shit to cover today.
Yeah, shit makes my face tingle.
I just gotta stop and laugh at that for a second. That was too fucking good. No, they're I don't know what poppers are anymore. I don't know what poppers used to be, but I know good enough now that we don't. I don't buy a lot of stuff on the street nowadays. Surprise, surprise! Contrary to popular opinion or to my appearance, I mean, I'm getting a little long in the tooth for that sort of thing. But smelling salts are the same stuff that you used to, like, you know, you would use in sports and stuff to wake somebody the fuck up. Or ammonia salts. It's that stuff, you smell it and it makes all your capillaries in your entire head go. So next thing you know, that's what making me laugh so hard. Maybe it wasn't the fact that they were happy I was showed up that keeps them from offering smelling salts. Maybe they're all afraid that I'll just start laughing when everybody else is like, yeah! Because that is what would happen. 110%. That shit's always funny to me. Always, always funny to me. Start beating your chest and be like, I am the man. And then I'm like, oh, man, look at the gorilla. Go, gorilla, go.
So you were just saying before we started that these smelling salts smell just like the inside of the Red Pyramid?
Correct. Yeah, it's pure chemical ammonia, right? And people say that this smell is because of bats. Dude, I've been in plenty of structures in Egypt where there's an abundant amount of bats, and it smells like a rodent cage. It has a very animalistic urine and feces type smell. Inside the Red Pyramid is 100% pure chemical ammonia. And anybody that's been on my tours or anybody that's been inside of the Red Pyramid will corroborate that it is a very intense, pure chemical ammonia smell. And of course, we have tons of.
No, I can't say because I haven't been there, but I will. You know what? There's enough people that corroborate it that there's no real point in kicking the tires on that. I would say that it is an interesting thing that one pyramid seems to be the one that smells of pneumonia. There's in Illinois, for example, where I grew up, in Southern Illinois, there's a bunch of state parks that have, or city parks, I should say, that have like one piece of leftover, sewer pipe that they were putting in, like a big piece of concrete tubing. And so they put this tube in the ground and they bury it with dirt. And, over time, areas like that, they smell like ammonia because so many people piss there, but kids, drug dealers, I don't know. I'm thinking about with my 80s brain. So kids and drug dealers, the first thing that come to mind nowadays, in all honesty, it's just probably just people looking for a place to piss, right? Nobody being too terribly nefarious, but anyway, these areas, smell like ammonia. They don't smell, like anything else, but just kind of a ubiquitous thing. It's like if you're in a park that's got that problem, it's going to be in six or seven different places. So it is interesting that you're only seeing it the one pyramid. Now somebody's going to be correcting me down in here. Salts for deadlifting. Yeah, that's pretty much what you're talking about. The limestone deals with the other smells. That's possible. You would still think the same kind of thing. I mean, that's the deal, is we've got the same basic construction materials in all of these. So the same basic background chemistry going on. Here's the thing, is even if like you get speculative and you're like, okay, say an entire 1,000 years of the history of this pyramid, and all there's a bunch of Egyptians, like it was a thing that they were like, oh, we piss in this pyramid to defile it or whatever. Even then, after a bunch of time goes, you would think that the smell of ammonia would go away. So the fact that it's still there is kind of, it is interesting, right? I mean, now, I guess if you want to get really skeptical, you could say that Jeff goes in there every night and pees in a corner to make sure. That's why he moved to Egypt, right? Hopefully, I don't need to tell you I'm fucking joking there. Some people will probably be like, oh my God, Dale will go through any lengths to debunk someone, won't he?
Chemical analysis data that supports the conclusion that the smell and the staining inside the Red Pyramid has absolutely nothing to do with bats. It's been proven with chemical analysis data. It is 100% the result of the chemical reactions that were occurring inside of the structure, with the smell emanating from the final synthesis chamber.
So
really quickly, to harp on a point that I bitch about all the time, unfortunate reality is these kinds of papers end up being ignored by mainstream Egyptologists and embraced by people that have no problem putting things like the smoking gun evidence for ancient high technology right in the abstract. So then you end up with you get to pick and choose your scientists, just like their politicians. God, I love America right now, or the world right now, the internet. There we go. De Duncan be punking on academia, son. Very nice. Oh, shit, wrong one. Very nice. Thank you. Where are the papers? Yeah, I would imagine this would be something that I'll look up in before the next one. AI. That is a very, very good point, and it'll be something that I look into. Will be, when I'm done going through these, I'll bring Jeff on and sit down and have a chat with him. And ask him the questions that I've got and see what evidence he has. Because, some people think that, like, last time there was a few people that walked away with the attitude that I just was trying to, like, debunk his stuff. And I always try to play devil's advocate and look at everything from both sides whenever I look at these things. I talk about that a lot, but there's a reason, man. I mean, I compare it a lot to chess. It's like, if you want to win a game of chess, you have to accurately evaluate your opponent's position. You don't get to just be like, well, I sure hope he doesn't see that ain't fucking how it works. So it's the same kind of thing in my mind. It's if you're evaluating something, Like, you look at it from the perspective of the proponent, like Jeff. You also look at it from the perspective of a hardline skeptic, like a Flint Dibble. But then you try to be, like, you know, sensible, and recognize that both parties are going to have their own biases, and then I will too. But I'm trying, like, actively trying to eliminate mine. And I'm not saying that Jeff and Flint are in any way comparable. I'm saying that if you have a bias towards, if you believe something, you know, I don't think Jeff would have any problem saying that he believes that that he believes in his hypothesis, right? And so that means he's going to be looking at evidence differently than Flint will, who doesn't believe in it. And then if I look at it from the middle and kind of take in both. Hey, thank you so much, Bald Scream. I appreciate that. Anyway, that's how I look on this kind of crap. Vote on people instead of issues, part of why things don't get better. That's exactly right, Dwayne. It's an unfortunate reality. I don't like to yabber about politics much, but yeah, is you know, the cult of personality stuff isn't new. It's super fucking old, from before my time even. And you know, and that's almost impossible to imagine. And you know, and it's the same old problem.
We have a long list of shit that we want to cover today. I think you texted me a list of like 50 items.
Yeah.
And we had to narrow it down so we wouldn't have a 12-hour podcast.
Yeah.
And we're going to do our best.
It's going
to
be epic.
To keep this organized and stay on topic with each topic and you know, maybe hit them for like 15, 20 minutes each.
Yep.
Keep going. We got a ton of stuff from Japan to the Serapium to lightning stuff to these chambers that were found under this pyramid, the SAR scans.
Yeah. Speaking of, I brought you a present, right? Because I always like to bring gifts. I see you still have my scarab sitting over there.
Yes, I do.
This is for after the podcast, a little victory cigar.
Oh, hell yes.
And brother, the first time I tried that particular cigar was actually in Malta, where I was invited to attend the exclusive SAR conference when they released a bunch of the data that we'll see at the end of the episode when we talk about the SAR scans.
You were there at the first
conference. I was there, correct. Yeah. Their first public international conference. That's a fantastic cigar. You'll really enjoy that one.
Wait to let that bastard up.
Where's the proof they use fertilizer at all? You would think it would be trackable in the soil and seeds. You would think, but it's also possible. I mean, you know, if the nutrients were organic and, you know, they're looking for like the telltale signs of chemicals that came from the stuff there, you know, if the plants eat this shit, you know, it stands to reason you're not going to find much of it left. I mean, you know. Why don't we find any pieces of corn in an old cornfield if there's a famine going on, right? Because everybody's went and got it all. You just changed from kings and queens to presidents and prime ministers. Oh, yeah, we've done more than that even. Now we have the illusion of transparency and all this stuff. Yeah, they didn't give me any cigars while I was there either. They just turned me loose in Florida and left me to my own devices. I managed.
Well, first of all,
yes,
to start this thing off,
yeah,
I completely butchered
your
theory when I was on Rogan's podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
So just give us like a quick elevator pitch for people. Let's this is a brand new podcast, right?
Yeah.
For people that haven't heard about your theory before, haven't seen your work before.
Well, I really think this is important. Like I admitted, that's why we changed the video that I'm going through, right? As people were telling me I'm going through and I'm getting things wrong. And a lot of that's because Jeff was a new presenter at the time and it was disjointed. And I'm not super familiar with the theory. I know the basic outline of the theory. So when I'm listening to him talk and I miss, you know, anyway, I don't want to get things wrong. And so, you know, we egg on my face and we move on. Danny Jones is the same way. It's like, you know, as long as you're not, as long as you're not focusing on it, as long as you're not like focusing on getting things wrong and stuff, I mean, there's nothing wrong with pointing out that you made a mistake. We need to move on. And every now and again, it is actually worth focusing on. But oftentimes it's just kind of pointless self-flagellation, right?
Before, just give people a very high level summary of what you believe the purpose of the Egyptian pyramids was.
Yeah. So first and foremost, thank you so much for even bringing it up in that public forum. I really appreciate it. You've been such an advocate and supporter of my work. Even before I came on the first podcast that we did here, you were promoting and supporting my work. So I really appreciate that. Any mention is a good mention, but it is good to do a quick refresher. Mm-hmm. So my work focuses on the function of ancient structures around the world, not just the Egyptian pyramids and not just the Great Pyramid. I've proposed hypotheses from everything from stone circles and obelisks, passage chamber reactors like Newgrange, the Serapium, the Hypogeum, the Osirion, Step Pyramid, Red Pyramid, Bent Pyramid, Great Pyramid, Central Pyramid, and the list goes on and on from there. We're also going to talk about today the Teotihuacan complex in Mexico, which...
No, I will say real quick, I'm having a great time, Spam. Thank you. I would say this is one of the problems that I have with one of the things that I've had to, the more that I've got to start evaluating other people's hypotheses, like, I guess, you know, back in the day, I just got to pick and choose the ones that I wanted. So I would read the ones that made sense, and I wouldn't read the ones that didn't make sense. And if the wording was a little clunky, or if I thought that, you know, it was just disjointed, or they said something like, I see it here, the entire, all these are connected in a very technological way like this. This to me is a sign of that bias. It's like, quite possible. For those of you who watch the channel, you know, I'm not going to deny that there was cross-continental contact long before history accepts that there was. What I'm saying, though, is that the idea that all these different cultures were using these, their stone structures for the same thing, does seem a little out there to me. You know, if we just look at modern days, we see that people are trying to emulate things like the cargo cults that we talk about all the time. They're trying to emulate things by making things look like other things, right? So right off the bat, we should expect to see some of that. And other, you know, assuming that if the whole world was aware of the technology that Jeff's positing in this video. So anyway, my point is that's something that I've had to learn to not knee-jerk at, because it's the kind of thing that inherently I'm like, oh, come on, man, we all know better than that. Well, we don't all know better than that. It's one of the signs of somebody who's a true believer in something. And again, being a true believer in something isn't wrong, isn't bad. They often bring, as long as a researcher is doing honest research, their beliefs, while they might interfere with their interpretation of the data, as long as they're honest in their research, their beliefs won't interfere with the data. And that is why you can look at the data itself and not the interpretation and find potentially the path to truth, which is why you'll hear me hammer on about things like carbon dating and whatnot, even though a lot of people are questioning those. I value the carbon dating a lot more than I do the words of some dude. All right, let's see what some of you all had to say. I'm a shill. Oh, dude, I'm the shilliest of shills. You know, I'm totally a shill. Love you, Dan. Great work. Thank you so much. He thinks 10,000 plus years old, apparently. What do I think? Oh, bye, poopsicle. Okay. Climate long ago. Do you agree with Randall Carlson that the Azores is Atlantis? Not exactly. I think that there's a good possibility there was stuff there, but I still think that there's a whole world to look at the time, and one looking at one little island and saying, ah, this is the place of the ancient civilization, is like looking around the world. If something wiped out the planet today and you look back 10,000 years from now, you look around the globe and people would remember the electronic civilization, right? And that means they would lump me and the Canadians and the French and the North Koreans all together in the same fucking umbrella term. And if that's not offensive to you, I don't even know what to say. Sorry, Mr. D. Duncan, after watching Jason's live the other day and all the things he pointed out, you lost all credibility. Okay. Oh, Bert Johnson, you never followed my page to begin with. If you're Jason, you're talking about archaics. That's fine. I didn't have to invite him to this thing to debate the Quest for Ancient Civilizations conference that was going to be October 16th through 18th in Austin, Texas. I figured that I would invite Archaics to debate there because he keeps wanting to, you know, talking about how he wants to debate and everything. Instead, he just switched it he'll debate Graham Hancock or Billy Carson. And it's like, all right, dude, whatever. Have fun, my friend. Go do whatever. So, yeah, anyway, that'll be the last we talk about him for a minute. Hit that like button. You're damn Skippy right. Okay. Ben from Uncharted X believes in geopolymer, but only in Poopka and Tiwanaku. Yeah, I agree with Ben on this exact thinking right here. Okay, it's not going to be a ubiquitous thing. All right, I do think there's places in South America that geopolymers are a pretty high probability of being what's there. But just assuming that, like, because geopolymers potentially are a thing, that everybody's like, geopolymers are the answer. It's like, no, dude, that's not exactly the way that works.
In the context of today's episode, I'll present two new theories. Nobody that I know of has proposed a hypothesis for the function of the Serapium, nor has anyone presented a cohesive hypothesis for the function of the Teotihuacan complex. So I'm going to present those here today, brand new revelations that I've been working on recently. But long story short, the overview of the function of the Egyptian pyramids are a series of industrial scale chemical reactors, starting with the step pyramid that was utilized for the extraction of bedrock deposits of methane. That methane was converted into ammonia inside the Red Pyramid. The Bent Pyramid took that ammonia solution and converted it into urea, a solid compound fertilizer. And then on the Giza Plateau, we have our metallurgy and mining acid extraction chemical manufacturers. The Great Pyramid producing sulfuric acid and the Central Pyramid producing hydrochloric acid. And my work in progress hypothesis for the final pyramid, the third pyramid, is that it was producing a basic solution to neutralize those two acidic compounds.
Okay, so the Great Pyramid was sulfuric acid.
Sulfuric acid, correct.
And the middle one was
hydrochloric
acid. Yes. And the small one?
A basic solution. Just so basic in terms solution. Of, okay. I haven't come to a final conclusion on the exact.
I really, before I listen to him go on there, just to kick the tires on that a little bit, it would seem to me, you know, without knowing the details of the production, you would want more. Of your neutralizer, your base solution that would to neutralize the acid. It seems to me you would want more of that. Now, I don't know how big the pyramids are alongside the manufacturing process. So, of course, we'll watch as we go on. But, Dan, sorry, but I also don't believe you find traces of that stuff in huge quantities. I mean, maybe, but, you know, I the storage of all those fertilizer chemicals. I don't know. But, I mean, this is, that's, to me, that's kind of jumping ahead of the game. But thank you, Data Footprints. It's hard to say for sure where or what, but like you start checking fields for fertilizers from hundreds of years ago and stuff. I mean, I think it would be pretty hard pressed to tell exactly what they were using on a chemical level. Again, I think nature would eat up that stuff. So again, it would be something that would be worth testing, but I don't, let's put it this way. I wouldn't use it as a means to debunk it because it's not going to, it doesn't kick the tires very hard. Where they stored it is potentially something that matters, but he talks about that with the pipes and stuff. And I mean, I have more of a problem with how they were doing stuff with gas. Once it's a solid, they can fucking move that around, you know, all matter of ways. No, you're fine, D.O.A. I don't have a problem with people asking questions. I don't have a problem with people asking questions at all, man. Thank you, Tony's Lark. I appreciate it. Let's carry back on and see what we got.
Act chemical compound that was in the final pyramid. But if you have, for example, a leach mining complex where you're doing in situ chemical manufacturing, it would make a lot of sense to have two acidic compounds and one basic. Because at some point you want to neutralize the reaction and stop the vitriolic effects of the acidic solutions by neutralizing it with a basic compound.
Okay.
And I would hypothesize that process was utilizing the byproduct of the hydrochloric acid manufacturing inside the central pyramid, which is sodium bisulfate.
Okay.
And so something like sodium hydroxide.
And the purpose of all these chemicals, this chemical manufacturing plant, which were the Great Pyramids, you believe that the purpose was there's a multitude of factors, but number one was fertilizer. And then number two was metallurgy.
Correct. Yeah. So basic applications starting with domestic methane, right? Natural gas. We still use natural gas today for heating, lighting, all sorts of domestic applications.
Methane went to ammonia.
Correct. Right? And methane is also an industrial synthesis gas that is utilized to produce other industrial chemicals. Mm-hmm. In this instance, they're converting the methane into ammonia inside the Red Pyramid.
Yep.
And the Red Pyramid and Bent Pyramid are fertilizer manufacturing compounds.
Now, this just get pretty interesting. Again, it capturing and controlling the gas is a little bit trickier than just working with it. But, you know, for those of you who've seen my video on the Baghdad battery, you know that I'm not opposed to the ancients having some degree of understanding of chemistry. As a matter of fact, it's almost a foregone conclusion, right? There's really no way around it. But the idea that... let's put it this way. Each step in this chemical manufacturing process requires a large amount of trial and error. You know what I'm saying? So you can't really take and say, in my mind, and you can't really take and say, they understood how to make methane. Ergo, next step is this, next step is this, next step is this. That's where it really does... This is where that where the seeing it everywhere becomes a problem to me. In my mind, it makes a whole lot more sense that one or two pharaohs would have this knowledge and then it dies. And then you end up with a bunch of wannabe pyramids. So you have some pyramids that actually make methane, that actually do what, in this case, actually do what they, what Jeff's saying they do. And then you would have some that are just dummies, that aren't meant to be dummies. It's just like, you know, just like the cargo cults. If we wear this and build that, this happens, right? So anyway, it seems a lot more to me, a lot more likely to me, but what do I know? I'm just some bitch.
Now, ammonia has a vast array of different applications, and we'll talk about some that are beyond the scope of my work, which is very, I've had it described as rational, practical, and mundane. So there are some far out there applications for ammonia and methane, like rocket fuel.
Mm.
So people have proposed. Yeah,
this whole theory is not, it's not sensational enough. There's no, right. there's no place to plug in aliens.
Well, so we can get into that discussion if you'd like. So it's,
I'm not saying there has to be.
Right. But it certainly is a correlation,
mm-hmm.
because I'll show when we get to the Great Pyramid, there's a research article that says the first thing that we would do if we were traveling to the moon, Mars, or asteroids, the first thing we would do is build facilities for in situ chemical manufacturing and mining operations. Because we don't want to bring all the equipment that we need if we're going to inhabit extraterrestrial planets.
Right.
You want to be able to manufacture everything that you need on site.
Right.
So if there was an extraterrestrial civilization that came here,
mm-hmm.
the first thing that they would do is build industrial in situ chemical manufacturing and mining operations so that they could produce all of the chemicals that they need and mine metals and all these sort of things.
Wow.
I assume y'all follow what's being said there, is that maybe the aliens built the pyramid so that they could mine and play with chemicals and stuff if they were the ones that came here first. And see, to me, that is just, you know, just leaving a door open there. He's just pointing out that you could plug this in, like Danny just got through saying there's no place to plug in ancient aliens. And Jeff's like, actually, there's a slot right here that accepts it just nicely. You know, as a content creator, I hate to, you know, peer behind the veil for a second, but it only makes sense to, you know, try not to alienate your audience too much, right? And so he knows that some of the people that are watching are going to be Ancient Aliens fans, and so he's, you know, pointing out that this is not mutually exclusive. Now, to me, you know, as I've said before, I think that I don't think the ancient aliens things is impossible, but once you leave the realm of this planet, you know, the odds go way higher of it not being accurate, right? And so it becomes something that's less likely, but still not outside the realm of possibility. But anyway, all right, aliens would help humans with them, with what they can understand. That would be ideal. They might eat us too. I mean, I don't know if you grew up at a time when V was on, but yeah, they fucking ate us on that. And they used us in their war after they stole all our water. Let's put it out there. Ammonium nitrate is more useful than fertilizer. Yeah, see, that's just it. Is we don't know for sure what else they could have been using it for. We don't know to what extent they were using ammonium and stuff for. But it's, you know, it's, how you put it? If they have to go through a lot of trouble to manufacture it, they're probably not going to just be willy-nilly about throwing it around and experimenting with it, right? Oh, hey, also, I figured I should plug this really quick. For those of you who are in the Washington State area, at the beginning of October, I forget the exact date, maybe the 6th, I'm going to be in the Lake Chelan region with the Gramerica crew for the camp at the cabin. And we're going to be all running around and drinking beers and talking about cool stuff. Randall Carlson's going to be there. We're going to be talking, like, you know, Washington State mega floods. I mean, I'm going to be there yabbering about elongated skulls like the Tyranids, Cactus Jack. Yeah, it's going to be great. So anybody who wants to show up there's a link down below to the Gramerica stuff too and to the thing in Austin. It's going to be tremendous. No, methane has been produced by people for thousands of years. Yeah, I'm not really arguing with that. Dan, my friend, good morning from here in New Zealand. Good morning to you too.
Wow.
Yeah. So again, we'll talk about the Haber-Bosch process.
That's interesting.
How Fritz Haber may have actually been inspired by reverse engineering the Red Pyramid.
Fritz Haber, yeah.
And so this also brings up a discussion of the Kardashev scale of advanced civilizations. Are you familiar with this scale? Okay, so the Kardashev scale of advanced civilizations is type 1, type 2, and type 3. A Kardashev type 1 civilization is an advanced civilization that has the capability of harnessing all of the power and natural resources of the planet of inhabitants for all of the applications that would be beneficial to the society.
Okay.
We are rated as a 0.73 on the Kardashev scale.
Yeah, I've always had problems with this scale because of this. It's like, you become a level 2 civilization when you can harness all the energy of your sun. And it's like, okay, you become a level 1 technological civilization when you create Harry Potter wands that say Expelliarmus. And these are some fucking arbitrary ass standards, dude, that nobody's achieved. Right, so it's like, come on, man, give us something a little bit more realistic here. If you're gonna rate it's so, I mean, I get that, you know, it's trying to be these Isaac Asimov type of motherfuckers writing this stuff, but it's, dude, okay, and this isn't to insult Jeff at all. This is just this idea of, I'll just put it this way. You know how sometimes ladies complain about unrealistic health standards or unrealistic beauty standards? This is exactly it. It's like, to be a good society, you need to be able to do this thing that nobody's ever managed to do in the entirety of human civilization. No problem, right? Good job. Like, fucking come on.
We are not yet a type 1 civilization, so we haven't mastered our ability to harness all of the power and natural resources here on the planet. But what we're going to talk about today is how this ancient civilization was as close, if not even superior to where we are, for the optimization and utilization of all of Earth's natural resources for the function of these ancient structures around the world.
Okay, let me focus one more. This again has nothing to do with Jeff's argument. This is a purely philosophical thing on that scale. But all of the planet's resources, you know what a tall ass that is. What a tall ask that is. This is like literally impossible. I mean, it doesn't matter how advanced your civilization, you have to be fucking Time Lord status. Like, you snap your fingers and shit happens kind of stuff. This is crazy. This is crazy.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I like the theory lately that we came from Mars and that there was a nuclear war on Mars and they found Earth, but it was too inhabitable because there were too many volcanoes and earthquakes and shit like that. So let's put this fucking circular moon.
Right. Yeah, the moon is crazy. Around it. And one of my favorite guests that you've had on is Jason Giorgiani. I love when he gets into talking about Mars and the moon, and he's an exceptional guest. Very, very cool guy.
He gets very deep. Yeah, he's the one who explained all this stuff to me. Dude.
Yeah, yeah. One of my favorites that you've had on so far.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is just talking about the Kardashev scale.
Yeah,
so
I've heard Michio Kaku talk about this.
Yeah, yeah. So a type 2 civilization would get into where they can harness the power of the sun. So things like Dyson spheres. A Dyson sphere is a hypothetical apparatus that could harness the power of the sun for power. And then a type 3 is a galactic civilization. So they say that human beings today are about 300 years away from becoming an actual type 1 civilization.
Again, this implies that that's even possible. You know what I mean? This implies that that is even a possible thing, and that's just, we don't know that. The South Atlantic anomaly has begun splitting, giving the Earth four poles. This last happened during the Gutenberg execution. Really? I haven't heard about that. I'll have to check that out. The South Atlantic anomaly, huh? I'll have to look into that. Thank you. I appreciate that. The rotten flesh. I love the internet for screen names alone. But no, thank you. I'll have to check into that. And this Dyson sphere is, again, total BS. Yeah, the Dyson sphere, we don't know about. We don't know for sure. But, it's kind of, it's just so hypothetical, right? It's like you can imagine some chick going into a plastic surgeon's office and he's got the fucking Barbie doll, the silhouette on the wall. And he's like, yeah, we're just going to hack and chop and add parts until you look like that. It's like, Jesus titty fucking Christ. Come on, man. We're a little bit off of reality here. I'm not saying that we shouldn't try to do our best. I'm saying that some of this shit is absolutely impossible. You're going to harness the entire power of the fucking sun. Really? You're just going to surround it with all these. There's like just so much to take in there that we haven't even contemplated. It's on such a massive scale. It's like, no border says it right there. It's on a scale so large, we just can't even begin to grasp. It's just like, come on, man. Come on, man. This is crazy. Can't miss the South Atlantic anomaly. I'll have to check that out. All right. We'll just carry on with some more of this.
And I'll show you in the process of the conversation today how the ancient technology on this planet is indicative of the type of activities that would be performed by a type one civilization. They were harnessing Earth for power sources, for natural resource implementation, for construction materials, and also tapping into subterranean resources like methane gas and hydrogen sulfide, which below the Giza Plateau, there's a natural cave and tunnel system that is the source of hydrogen sulfide gas that was utilized within the Great Pyramid to produce sulfuric acid. And I'll show you a paper that proves that there are caves and tunnels and hydrothermal vent systems below the Giza Plateau, natural geological formations. But we have the source, this gas natural resource coming from the Earth below the Giza Plateau that is the source of the sulfur in hydrogen sulfide gas that was utilized in the Great Pyramid to produce sulfuric.
Just again, to kick the tires a little, proving that there's tunnels under the Giza Plateau, which most people are aware of, doesn't prove that there were carrying the hydrogen sulfide or whatever it was he was saying that we needed for his chemical dealio. But it doesn't mean they weren't there. This is all, again, this is just me kicking the tires on it. And the whole reason is because, you know, Jeff, okay, for those of you who aren't aware, it's like if in a situation like this, I personally am very much of the opinion that guys like Jeff need guys like me. You know, he's got this great idea that is, but he's a true believer. And so he's going to stretch his feet out there a little bit further than they should go. My friend Jimmy Corsetti says it to me all the time. He's like, man, I start to get going and you don't stop me from running off, but you'll keep me from going too far. Every now and again, you'll just be like, you pull me back a hair. And honestly, I mean, I think maybe that's why humanity has both of these types of psyches. Maybe they're supposed to work together. Maybe it is supposed to take an Einstein and an Oppenheimer, a guy to come up with the general idea and then another guy to hammer that directly into the exact shape that they want. Not saying that I'm an Einstein or an Oppenheimer. I'm more like the homeless guy out front holding the sign that says you got any change, and they let him build the Hoover Dam, and when he falls in, they're like, ah, fuck it, don't fish him out. But you get what I'm saying. Hey, I pressed the button, goddamn stupid computer.
Acid.
Interesting.
Yeah, dude, I'm going to go hard today. Yeah.
You're my tour guide, baby.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's jump in face first.
All right, so the first thing I want to talk about, so I may have showed this slide, the first artifact that ever changed my mind regarding the function of the Egyptian pyramids, this collection bowl at Abu Sir. So really, this is just a demonstration of the implementation of the different colors of the construction materials. Are you familiar with the story of Atlantis?
Yes.
Okay, so they say that Atlantis was made of three different colors of stone, black, white, and red. The Egyptian pyramids and the adjacent pyramid complexes are all made of three different colors of stone, black, white, and red, namely black basalt, white limestone, red quartzite, and red granite.
Okay.
So there's a direct connection between the mythology of Atlantis and the three colors utilized in the construction of the Egyptian pyramids. We also use the same color coding system for our modern electrical wiring, black, white, and red. And I use that phrase color coding intentionally because there is information stored in this color coding system that tells you exactly what each type of stone is for.
Not really sure what electrical stuff has to do it, but sure, okay. I mean, let's roll with it. I'm just not sure why he would mention that there's that we use the same color coding there, because that's totally a convention. That's a Western electrical residential and commercial and stuff uses black, white, and red. But if you go wire a helicopter or something, you're going to find the shits all over the place. You go do your telephone line or something like that. A lot of it has to do with the identification of the colors in dimly lit rooms and stuff like that. But the fact that it's tied to Atlantis a little bit through the colors is definitely an interesting point. Just want to watch some guy saying burial mounds and also multicolored and tiered. Oh, shucks. Thank you. The fact that Dan is open to this is a lot about Dan. Open minds. I appreciate it. Hey, Sluggy, how you doing? Yes, this is a good image. I try my best. My image is, it's hairy. Damn it, you're doing it again, stupid computer.
All three of these type of stones are dielectrics, which mean that they can store electric fields. Granite, limestone, and basalt are all dielectric materials. They're not electrical conductors. They are electrical insulators that when you induce an electric field, it will store and hold on to that electric field within the material.
Okay.
So limestone is... your primary electric field storage component. Red granite is utilized for the production of ultrasound, and black basalt is a material that was used for heat storage. And I'm going to
All right. Now, I'm not saying that dielectrics don't exist, but they are extremely, these are the kinds of things you have to have in very exacting conditions in order for them to function in any meaningful sense. Because, well, like, for example, like he says, these are insulators. So, like, you lose a lot of juice, effectively. Yes, you can get electricity out of some of these, but the amount of electricity you get back is so tiny compared to what you put into it. Anyway, this is where I get a little, when we get into the very specific parts of it, this is where I want to see things basically tested. I get a lot more skeptical. For those of you who've watched me, you're probably aware, I'm a lot less skeptical on general claims. When you start getting more and more specific, it gets a lot, well, hang on a second. What about this? What about this? What about this? So, anyway, I would be interested to see this stuff tested. Dr. Greg Little on Matt Bill Mound stuff. What, did Greg Little test some of that stuff? I haven't seen all of Matt Bell's stuff. I watched every episode there for about 6 months or close to a year even, but I haven't seen them all.
Show research papers in the context of this presentation that will corroborate that hypothesis.
Okay.
So anytime you see white in a pyramid, you know it's for storing electric fields. Anytime you see red, it's for the production of ultrasound. And anytime you see black, think heat storage.
Got it.
So there's information and communication encoded in this.
Yeah, see, that's that kind of ubiquity that what makes me a little bit more, I would say that's a good rule of thumb. I wouldn't say anytime think. I would say anytime you see that, that's a possibility. Again, I'm not, this is a difference in thinking between a true believer and a guy who's looking into it from the outside, but giving it a fair shake. And again, I don't think Jeff would have any problem with that. And I hope most of you don't have a problem with it. I know some people hate it if you don't agree with somebody's, you know, some personality or their favorite idea or whatever. And if that's the case, I'm sorry, it's probably not the channel for you. Oh, shit. I got a super chat just as we got here. Oh, member for 19 months, 757. Oh, Dan, you are the man. Well, thanks, 757. I appreciate it, brother. You are all right yourself. I don't care. I don't care how many times
color coding system
you.
That tells us exactly what these stones are for. Pretty wild stuff. Yeah. And we'll also get into the context of today's conversation, how the pyramids were integrating natural resources that are found abundantly in Egypt for this chemical manufacturing process. So, for example, we have sulfur, air, water, natural gas, right? Yeah. All of these are earth natural resources. And each one of the structures in Egypt was designed to harness these earth natural resources. So, for example, the step pyramid was used to extract bedrock deposits of methane. The Serapeum used water and ultrasound to produce hydrogen and oxygen. The Red Pyramid was using hydrogen and nitrogen for the production of ammonia. The Great Pyramid, sulfur and air to produce sulfuric acid. And then you can take those two sulfuric acid and ammonia products and convert it into ammonium sulfate, which is another ammonium-based fertilizer compound.
Right.
So basically, the premise for my hypothesis and the comparison to a Kardashev type 1 civilization is that whoever built these things here on the planet, believe what you may about whoever built these things, they were very, very close to a Kardashev type 1 civilization where they were harnessing all of Earth's natural resources and implementing them in the function of these structures for a variety of beneficial applications.
Yeah. Well, see, I can understand that, but again, poopsicle, there is too much certainty with the lack of real evidence for me in most any of it. Pretty much every single thing you see, and I don't just mean this hypothesis, I mean pretty much every hypothesis, mainstream or you know, goofy fringe pyramidiate, we always end up seeing basically the same sort of thing. We have we don't know, man. We fucking don't know. We'll very, very rarely know. Like, they talk about the writing stuff all the time, and they had that paper a few months back, and they're like, oh, check out this proto-writing. We ran this computer software model through all this stuff, and we did all these things, and we were done. We were able to prove we were able to mathematically model that most likely these were proto-writing. It's like, can't prove any of it with any of that stuff. It's just more likely than not. And then you turn around and you hold up something like that moon bone that I like to talk about from Aubrey Blanchard, And it's like so much more advanced and so much more readily recognizable. And it's just, it doesn't, it just kind of gets ignored for whatever. It just kind of doesn't make the conversation in those things for whatever reason. Hello, Gutters Pub. Thank you. Like the stream. That's right, Dave. Make them like the stream.
So they were using Earth's natural electricity as the power source. The Egyptian pyramids are not.
Oh, yeah. Hang on. I have more I wanted to say first. Excuse me. Yeah, the idea that the one civilization was harnessing all of the Earth's source resources is pretty. It is interesting. But I think it's way more likely. This is what's good about guys like Jeff, because he'll find evidence anywhere, potentially. And some of that just needs to be rejected through, you know, like through the process of distillation. Assume that he's correct in his core hypothesis about what the pyramids were used for. Now you start looking around the rest of the world and you might find that other places that he's posited don't quite line up as well. But he's still finding pieces of the puzzle. This, you know, it might sound like crap, but if you haven't heard me talk about it before, the guy Carl Christian Roffin, for example, the guy that figured out that the Vikings were the first to discover the Americas before Columbus, he started out completely pissing up a rope, completely wrong information. He had no idea what he was talking about to begin with, but he eventually was right. Thanks, Data Footprints. I really appreciate it. I also love this dream. A Schrodinger's box contains a possum and a radioactive substance. There would be three at the same time, alive, dead, and pretending to be dead. Yes, very nice. Very nice.
Not producing electricity. The output, the product of the pyramids is chemicals. They were using the input of Earth's natural electricity. That's the whole premise of these advanced civilizations, is that you don't need to produce power when you can harness the power of the planet.
Right.
And that's exactly what this civilization was doing, utilizing telluric currents and lightning as the power source that drives the function of these structures. Whether it comes to stone circles, passage chamber reactors, or the Egyptian pyramids, all the mechanisms of operation are the same.
Incognito mode does not make you invisible to the internet. It does not keep anyone from watching you. Google recently settled a $5 billion lawsuit for being accused of tracking use.
We'll just let that play in the background for a second. I'll watch that while I talk with you guys. You know, the idea, this is why I think he has to have his stones storing some degree of electricity and whatnot, is so that he can have because the lightning, you know, isn't going to be a constant provider of electricity like we discussed last time. I do have a bit of a problem with them. It's hard to just store electricity in a rock, all right? But, again, I don't have a problem with the basic idea of what he's got going on here. And it is possible that there were, you know, there definitely is, like when they do the electricity scans of the Great Pyramid and stuff, and they find that electricity is like focused at the top and whatnot, but it's because of the shape, and that makes sense. You know, it's not, you know, if you've seen radio antennas, you understand exactly that sort of thing, that this is, it's not crazy that energy gets directed along the lines of something physical. This isn't a wild idea, but, it's still, this is where, again, with these more specific things like this, this is where stuff needs to get borne out. And I know people are like, hey, we could just AI model this and stuff. It's like, dude, I'm not even going to buy that. I would need to see this, like, it doesn't need to be reconstructed to scale, but it needs to be reconstructed on a fairly, you know, on a somewhat of a larger scale, large enough that it's, you're going to run into some of the same problems. Because there's some big motherfucking rocks there, man. But anyway, carrying on. We've got past the commercial now.
That there was any sort of connection. Do you think the pyramids were possibly using some sort of like seismic vibration of the igneous rock under it at all?
No, but I will get into, when we talk about Pyramid Korematsu in Japan, mm-hmm. how it's possibly built on top of a geothermal formation where they may have been using volcanic formations that are also sources of sulfur gas, which are all, you ever heard of the sulfur springs in Japan?
Mm-hmm.
These things are all over the place.
Right.
And there's good, strong evidence that supports the hypothesis that the Japanese pyramid Korematsu, which has internal red granite reaction chambers that are similar to the Great Pyramid, that they built that thing on top of a geothermal sulfur gas source.
So not necessarily seismic waves, but certainly geothermal activity.
Right.
And again, the primary power source being telluric currents and lightning, because there's a direct connection between telluric currents, subterranean natural resources like water and metal ore mineral deposits, the location for lightning strikes, and the recirculation of this electric current into the earth.
Right.
So the second thing that they were using were conductivity enhancers, like subterranean water and metal ore minerals.
Yeah, I mean, I had to repeat myself, but yeah, that stuff really needs to be tested. That, you know, that this is where these ideas that are elegant and interesting really, they can fall apart on a gnat's hair. So, it really is. I agree, Odorless Duke. This is probably the best theory out there. As far as, I mean, I wouldn't say it's the best theory of all of the pyramid theories, but I'd say as far as like a technological theory, I would say that this is probably the bestest one of all of them. I still think there might not have been a technological reason at all. I know it makes me a fucking big old charlatan over here for saying such a thing. I know that I'm supposed to just be like, you know, a yes man for everything. Just ask everybody. I'm just a big old lying grifter. Just says whatever people want to hear.
To facilitate the uptake of telluric currents. Mm-hmm. And I'll talk about this here in just a second, how that connects to all of the stone circle sites and also all of the Egyptian pyramids are connected into the same power source. Mm-hmm. So again, one of the most important things for me when it comes to a cohesive hypothesis on the function of ancient structures around the world, the mechanisms of operation that drive the structures have to be consistent across the board. That's why I disagree with hypotheses that focus only on the Great Pyramid, because they ignore the big picture. Mm. And the mechanisms of operation that they say are related to the Great Pyramid specifically don't apply to any of the other pyramids, and they don't apply to more ancient structures like stone circles.
Mm. Okay, now this is a great example of why I value different kinds of thinking, because I don't think like that, all right? My mind says, you know, you're going to find a difference in the way that we do things and the way the Koreans do things and the way the French do things. You're going to find some similarities, but you're also going to find some differences, right? One country might be more focused on electricity powering the smaller devices, and another, like a water pump, for example, and another country might be using the chemicals to do the same thing or something, whatever. My point is that you don't have the same technology ubiquitously across the board in time and space. But by Jeff looking at it that way and saying, he ends up looking at things from a different perspective. And I would dare say, you know, looking at it from the outside, I would dare say neither one of us would be right necessarily, that, you know, it's more on a case by case basis, I would think. But the fact is, looking at things from a different perspective is like when you're trying to deduce a mystery, man, when you're trying to fucking see through the fog of bajillions of years of history and human fuckery, stealing artifacts and lying about things, and just, and I don't mean like stealing artifacts and lying about things. I just imagine if you're some fucking poor ass Egyptian dude and you've like Napoleon and his boys come recently running around. And so you just went and raided this tomb that you used to play at with your friends when you were 12. And you just went and grabbed a bunch of scrolls and shit. And this honky comes up to you and he's like, "Hey man, I was looking for some scrolls from Khufu's grave. Do you know where are these from?" "Khufu's grave? All of them. Who would have guessed? That's what you're looking for. I've got 10 of them." It's like, you know, this is just how it happens, man. So, no, I haven't heard of that one yet. Sorry. The Spirit and Stone YouTube channel yet. Nope. I'll have to check it out one of these days. Yes, they ate a lot of mummies. Quartz can be piezoelectric. No one can show stored energy. They can only assume it. Yeah, they'd have to replicate similar results. I agree. Just going to make sure I'm not missing any of y'all. Anything too terribly? Oh, thanks for the membership. Yeah, I'm not. I think 757 is the one that gave you that. Yeah, 757 is a nice guy that way.
Mm. But according to my research, there's a direct connection in the function of stone circles that leads to the apex implementation of the technology in the Egyptian pyramids. Same mechanisms, same power source, same knowledge,
right?
Same pattern of thinking went into designing stone circles and the function, for example, of the Great Pyramid.
Did you say that you've been building your own copy of one of these pyramids?
Yeah. So we have a 1-40 scale model of the Red Pyramid of Dahshur. And I'll show you the video here in just a little bit of this model in operation. It took over a year.
And the Red Pyramid made methane?
Ammonia.
Ammonia.
Correct. So I'm going to show you
how long did it take you to build that?
Dude, it took this guy forever. I didn't build it.
Oh, you didn't do it.
Shout out to a friend and supporter of the channel, John Sage. This guy is an absolute saint. And he took his own spare time building this thing, component after component after component.
Whoa.
And it is an immaculate 1-40 scale model of the internal reaction chambers of the Red Pyramid. And it works exactly as I've proposed. Jumping ahead in the conversation, I did some mathematical calculation.
Now that would be extremely interesting to check out. I'll have to look for that and dive into that before I have Jeff back on, because that's definitely worth looking into. It'll be interesting to see if it functions as intended and all of that. And as usual with sciencey stuff, I want to see some replicability. So my overall opinion on Jeffrey and his work, well, I mean, I'm kind of giving it now as we go. I mean, it's pretty interesting. It's just, I can't say 100% on anything. I'm not sold on anything. I think the mystery is still going, but I think he's definitely adding.
Demonstrate the temperature and pressure capabilities of the reaction chambers inside the Red Pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
These chambers are capable of generating approximately 500 degrees Celsius temperature and more than 40 atmospheres of pressure. Inside the reaction chambers.
Wow.
500 degrees C and 40 atmospheres of pressure, which gets into a discussion of the function of the pyramid body. The core body of the pyramids has a function.
Yeah.
So it was brought up on Rogan. He was like, you know, if they're just making fertilizers, why do they need such a big body of stone surrounding the Egyptian pyramids? There's several very, very good reasons. First one, to maintain the pressure. Mm. There were huge amounts of pressure occurring inside of these reaction chambers.
Yeah.
And if you don't have the pyramid body encasing the whole system, it'll completely explode.
Right.
Second thing, eliminating atmospheric contamination and pollution. Right, you're producing chemicals, and you don't want those chemicals leaking out into the atmosphere. For example, methane, ammonia, or sulfur-based gas or hydrogen chloride. You do not want that stuff getting into the atmosphere. So you have to have a big body of stone encasing your internal reaction chambers to prevent environmental contamination. Third reason being the stabilization of the internal reaction chambers while they were in operation.
Sure.
They aren't just standalone structures. You have to have a core surrounding it.
Yep.
Then we'll also get into the tetrahedral shape, right? The pyramid shape itself has a function. And it's a very, very specific reason why they used a pyramid, which is for concentration of electric fields around specific reaction chambers.
Also, if it was a...
So, if they went and tested his model out and the other pyramid the guy made, they would have to, and they're getting all these 40 atmospheres of pressure, they would have had to have used... some sort of electricity, like he was saying. So this is where the rubber is going to meet the road from what I see so far. But in all honesty, let's be clear about something. If everything else works and all it needs is a power source introduced to it, he's definitely looking in the right direction, right? I mean, that would be kind of uncanny, right? So if everything else functions as a chemical power plant or a chemical processing plant, and it's turning methane into ammonia, and the only thing they have to introduce to the shape, besides the water that he talked about, like he talks about water being raised, I'm sure he'll get to it, but water being used to pressurize the gas in those chambers, and then electricity would be used to create the chemical reaction and increase the temperature and the pressure. And well, at that point, because he talked about making steam even at that point, I'm not sure where they're getting the power from. I'm having a problem with his proposed powering of this thing, but I also have to say if the shapes function, he's definitely throwing his rocks in the right direction. I mean, maybe not, but it seems to me. How am I watching it for the first time? Oh, sorry, man. I'm watching this for the first time because, like, I literally watch, like, I should show you my inbox sometime. Here, I'll put this up on the screen. I should show you my inbox sometime. I, like, literally every day, probably two dozen between all of different platforms, I get at least a dozen people asking me to check out a channel, check out a video, check out a paper, check out their idea. Hey, Dan, can you de-dunk this? I get this all the time. And so I do watch as many different things as I can. Jeff's somebody I've talked to some, so I have some idea on his stuff. So I check out his take on New Grange. Yeah, they were talking about last time. I don't have a problem with him. I don't have a problem with this stuff at all. I can't keep up with everything. I wish I fucking could. Jesus Christ.
Chemical manufacturing plant. Why is it aligned with the constellation of Orion's belt?
So it's not.
It's not?
No.
It's fake news?
You talking about the King's Chamber shafts?
I have. I'll show.
I don't know. I thought,
yeah, the King's Chamber. So the pyramid complex on Giza itself.
Yes.
Right. That may be the case. And in terms of alchemy during the medieval period, everything was done in conjunction with the celestial alignments. So, for example, if you're an alchemist during the medieval period, you want to harvest your dew during certain phases of the moon.
Right.
In different conjunctions with different planets. They believe that had a direct effect on the chemistry. And this is true from the perspective of the electric universe theory, that our solar system is an interconnected electromagnetic circuit.
So you're saying people...
Don't do that, Jeff. All right. Electric universe stuff is going to, generally speaking, lose me. There's a video one of the electric universe guys made not too long ago, a few months back now, that they want me to debunk another one of these ones. Hey, debunk this. I'm not beefing with Jeff, you fucking silly bastard. No borders. I know who you are, you fucker. Yeah, the electric universe stuff I have a little bit of a problem with, mostly because, I worked with electricity a lot. And so, it gets difficult to hypothesize about things like on a fundamental level. I'm just like, well, I kind of know this already, but I don't, you know, I try to give it as much of a fair shake as I can. I do find it is one of the ones I have a harder time removing my biases from, which is why I haven't evaluated that yet. Because, you know, I know that everybody, all the real science educators think that I'm just some joke that I just, you know, go around and just talk out my ass and say whatever I want. But honestly, when I realize that I feel like I have a dog in the fight too much to the point where I can't, I just keep shaking my head at something, I walk away from it. The only reason, as a matter of fact, that I went ahead and did Archaics, the live stream on that, and just to throw rocks at it, was just basically everybody kept asking me to talk about it. You're not going to talk about it. I just wanted to show the man was a bit of an idiot. But yeah, I didn't even give his stuff a fair shake, to be honest with you, because I just saw immediately he didn't know what he was talking about. I was just like, all right. When I have a bias, there's no point evaluating. There's really no point evaluating. Let me be very fucking clear about that. This goes for everything, for politics, for car. Imagine if you tuned into my YouTube channel and it was a video game channel, and all I did was talk about video games for my favorite systems. And all my favorite video games were on the Xbox. And so now it's my video that's evaluating the next generation's consoles. Do you think I'm the best place to go, or do you think I might be leaning towards Xbox just a hair? And that's the fucking problem. That is the fucking problem. If you have a dog in the fight already, if you know you're biased already, why even bother? Why even bother? Let's go Xbox. All right. Carrying on.
During medieval times,
the alchemists, proto-chemists, all alchemy is done in conjunction with the stars.
What do they have to do with the...
Damn it. No, I went and got talking to you guys and forgot to talk about the video real quick. Okay. So one of the things that happens a lot with the true believer types I've noticed, and it's one of the other things that I've had to find myself a way to not reject their hypotheses outright when they say these sorts of things, because they'll often do this. That is, they often assume they know a lot about archaeoastronomy because the archaeoastronomy doesn't fit their narrative. So I saw a dude once that was just like, Göbekli Tepe's not, that scorpion's not Scorpio. Why? Because he's got his own little idea and it has nothing to do with the scorpion. So another one where, this is a great example here where he immediately was like, well, the star shafts aren't oriented towards Orion. He's like, no, they're not. And he's like, immediately, and it's because he's got a different idea about it. And even then, when he's like, well, you know, alchemy was tied to the stars and stuff, and it's like, well, even if you just take the mainstream Egyptological view, fuck all the Graham Hancockian Orion Osiris connection between the pyramids, Orion and Osiris were the one and the same in their mind, and Osiris was the god of the underworld. So even if you go by mainstream Egyptology, it makes sense that you would have some emulation of Orion potentially in their funerary complexes, right? Again, this is going by the mainstream rules. So anyway, it just seems weird to me. And but it's something that you have to learn, that when you have somebody that's got their own new hypothesis, a lot of times archaeoastronomy is it's tricky. It's hard to understand. First of all, a lot of people just think it's just about drawing patterns over the top of other patterns and viola, here it is. And that's really not what it is. And yes, archaeoastronomy is testable and repeatable. It fucking very, very, very much is testable and repeatable. And so when you're talking about a lot of times people get, and it's not against these people. I see it all the time, and it's very much a beneficial thing by and large. You can't but seeing things everywhere that aren't necessarily there isn't always a bad thing. A lot of times it's because this person's fixated on something that they're on the right path for. So I don't take an issue with that. I have to find myself to stop taking issue with it at times.
Pyramids being lined up with the...
It's the same thing. It's the legacy of ancient chemistry, starting with the Egyptian pyramids, went underground during the dynastic period, and it later became the alchemy of the medieval European period, proto-chemistry. Alchemy is chemistry.
Right. No, I understand
under a veil of spiritual ascension.
So you're saying the people during the medieval alchemists somehow got some sacred knowledge from the Egyptians?
100%.
Where did they get that?
It's through a long legacy of, you could call it secret societies, but the alchemists from Egypt became the later alchemists of the medieval European period. Through a long legacy of passing the knowledge on.
Orally?
Yes, orally, and also in sacred encoded alchemical texts. You know, the Arabs were the origin civilization that started chemistry. It started in Egypt.
Mm.
Actual chemistry.
Right.
Egypt is the birthplace of chemistry.
Like all land of chem,
right? Well, so the word K-H-E-M,
right,
the original name for Egypt, is the etymological root word for chemistry.
Uh-huh.
And Egypt is the birthplace of conventional chemistry. They were the first civilization to manufacture synthetic pigments. They made cosmetics. They made pharmaceuticals. All of these are chemical disciplines.
Right.
And in my opinion, the chemistry of the dynastic civilization is an inherited legacy of the Egyptian pyramids, which were no longer functional during the dynastic period, but they were still doing chemistry on a small scale.
Interesting.
Then that was inherited by the Greeks and the Romans, who came along and inhabited Egypt later. We see that legacy of chemistry in the Greek and Roman period in artifacts like the Lycurgus cup. Are you familiar with the Lycurgus cup? So it's a glass that...
Well... Oh, thank you, Dad's Footprints. I appreciate that. That's kind of you. This is, again, there's that ubiquitous thinking. I think that there was more to it than just chemistry. I do think that there was, knowledge passed down from before. I think most of it was mathematics and astronomical and engineering in nature. I wouldn't be surprised if some of it was chemical in nature. You know, that's where, Danny asked a fair question. Danny asked a fair question. He said that, whether or not, what mechanism it was that they passed on alchemy, through the ages. And that is, these are where things do get tricky because, tracking secret societies and whatnot isn't exactly an easy thing to do. On the flip side, you can't really make a claim that something happened when there's no evidence for it. Now, there is the alchemy traditions that he's not wrong that the alchemy traditions kind of came out of stuff from the Middle East, but it was really attached a lot more to, from what I understand, a lot more to esotericism and to Solomon and to the Key of Solomon and all that kind of shit. But I'm also of the opinion that the Baghdad Battery played a huge part in that, for example. Okie doke, carrying on, sorry.
That contains nanoparticles of gold, the Lycurgus cup.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it changes color based on certain wavelengths of light. And that red color that you can see there is because of nanoparticles of gold. The only way to produce gold nanoparticles is by using chemistry. You have to dissolve.
When was this made?
This is a Roman artifact.
No way.
Yeah. So this legacy of chemistry.
Like their theriac out of this shit.
Yeah, I would love to have that thing. I would love to have it. But the reason it turns red is because of gold nanoparticles.
Okay.
The only way that you can produce gold nanoparticles is by dissolving gold in a solution of aqua regia, which is a combination of hydrochloric acid and nitric acid. So they inherited this legacy of chemistry that then was passed on in a small scale through the European medieval time into these alchemists
which developed into our modern day chemistry.
Interesting.
So it's an unbroken legacy tracing from dynastic Egypt that developed into modern chemistry. And the origin of all of this is in the Egyptian pyramids.
Do you think the dynastic Egyptians knew how to operate all this shit? Or do you think
they
were them?
I think they were in operational before the dynastic period started.
Well, that's an interesting position. Yeah, I've always thought that cup was pretty cool. Ever since I first saw it, but that's not exactly proof that they knew about alchemy and whatnot, right? It's definitely this is the stuff where he's definitely, again, he's got this one minded view on things with the chemistry, and that's where it's honestly take a kind of overarching position that my channel often does. Whether or not Jeff's right or wrong, his viewpoint, let's put it this way, in 20 years, it will be safe to assume that a huge number of potential chemistry avenues for ancient artifacts and sites will have been exhausted thanks to the work of Jeffrey Drum. Right? I mean, this isn't fucking, this really can't argue about that. Same thing like with Ben Van Kirkway. He's looked at so many different artifacts for signs of ancient high tech that if there is something that's got precision measurements out there, you can bet money that Ben's going to be the guy that found it, right? Or that Ben will have found it eventually. So these kinds of things were, these kinds of things are pretty interesting and, not just interesting, but useful. Somebody going in there and being, having that one size fits all mentality, even though it might make pull my hair out when I look at it and be like, there's no way it's everywhere. A lot of times people see it as that way. And a lot of times they're helpful.
They knew about it. Mm-hmm. The priest class and the initiates and the alchemists of the dynastic period most likely inherited the knowledge of how the Egyptian pyramids operated.
When's your best guess when they were built?
So my research focuses on the Saharan humid period from 8500 BC to 5300 BC. So let me give you the brief overview of the timeline.
Okay.
So right after the cataclysm at the end of the last ice age, the survivors of that civilization started to implement their knowledge of earth physics and construction materials, utilizing these natural resources to produce functional structures, starting with stone circles and passage chamber reactors. So let's say circa 10,000 BC, they were building stone circles and passage chamber reactors like Newgrange that are proto pyramids. These passage chamber reactors evolved over about 2,000 to 2,500 years into the apex pinnacle execution of this physics and chemistry technology in the Egyptian pyramids.
Okay.
So it took 2,000 years of development to go from passage chamber reactors to Egyptian pyramids. The pyramids being operational from around 8500 BC to 5300 BC. And around 5300 BC, we see the end of the Saharan humid period. That somewhat marks the beginning of the dynastic period around 3500 BC.
Excuse me. So, the idea that, this was a technology that was being used by the survivors of the, Atlantis or whatever, that's interesting. Very interesting idea. This is where I get a little bit more, it becomes much more definitive. And so, a lot easier to kick the tires on, a lot easier to be like, I'm not so sure about. But it is, it seems like Dwayne, I don't think he's forgetting completely the rest of the world, but it does seem like he is to a degree. Hey, Wizard of the North, how's it going? Have a good one. Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate it. It's not going bad. How are you doing? Doing all right? Going to be going again. Let's let everybody know I'm going to be going again. Speaking of Canadian money, going to this here, a couple of things in October. One's going to be in Lake Chelan. One's going to be in Austin. One's going to be with the Grimerica crew. One's going to be with the Quest for Ancient Civilization. They're both going to be awesome. You're going to have a lot of fun. It'll be tremendous. You know you want to be there. If you don't, you don't have to, but you know you want to. Makes me miss Wizards of the Coast. Yeah, Wizards of the Coast is RIP. Sad times, but yeah, they suck. But, it's your birthday today. Oh, congratulations, man. Congratulations. But no, the idea that this was okay. The more definitive things like this happen, I'll draw you a parallel. With Dr. Martin Sweatman's work on Göbekli Tepe's Pillar 43 is some of the most interesting archaeoastronomy I've looked at. At the same time, when his idea that it's a like a warning to the future or something, I have a serious problem with. And so, you know, it's I don't have a problem with the work. I have a more of a problem with the underlying ideas and stuff. Not yet data footprints. I have to get my passport before I'm going to be doing anything. My son is not graduated from school. I got another year. After he graduates, that's when I'll be doing a lot of that stuff.
Interesting. And I'll get into this a little bit more. I have some slides that talk about. So what was the what was Giza? What did Giza look like around 8500 BC?
It would have not been a desert. No. It would have been a lush, fertile environment.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. And how do you think they moved all that shit?
The stones?
Yeah.
So the core. So there's a big myth about the construction of the Egyptian pyramids that they moved. You know, yeah. Prepare for a lot of debunking in today's episode. That they moved 2 million stones 500 miles.
Yeah.
That's not true.
No.
So for example, the Giza pyramids, all of the limestone blocks in the core of the pyramids themselves
right.
were quarried directly from Giza.
What?
That's 100% a fact.
This is well known, actually. Even the people like us in our crazy little corner. Oh, thank you, 757. I want to go to Peru. I want to go to Easter Island, too. Yes, thank you, Data Footprints. I want to. But no, what Jeff's saying there, yeah, that's actually, I'm kind of surprised. I thought it was well known in our corner of the internet. Yeah, the blocks for the limestone blocks for the pyramids, a huge number of them, did come from the Giza Plateau. There, you can see this. Yeah, Dylan, I noticed something. I won't say Danny's a noob. I will say this, and I don't think that, I'm not saying Danny's a grifter either, so let me be very clear about what I'm saying here. Sometimes you have to be a little bit, let's put it this way. People tell me that when they meet me, I'm the same person as what they meet in on the internet, but when they're on the internet, let's put it this, I never start a conversation with somebody in the real life. Hey, man, how's it going? Well, you know what? This is how it is, blah, blah, blah. When you start talking to, you're putting on a little bit of a show, okay? Everybody does it when you perform for the camera naturally. You point a camera at a kid and they're just going to perk, okay? When I noticed it, when I was talking to Danny and I brought up stuff about Christopher Dunn and Electric Pyramids, because I know Christopher Dunn's been on Concrete, and Danny acted like he hadn't heard it before. Well, he's doing that so that he's got something to say that's not interrupting me, that's not sidetracking me, and it's not like, oh, yeah, no big deal. So in these cases, I think you're going to see Danny, like in this case, I think that's why he was just like, oh, wow, really? I had no idea. I could be wrong. But yeah, he does that quite a bit.
The core blocks that you can see here.
These exterior blocks?
No, this is core. This is the core masonry. This is a picture of the Great Pyramid.
Yes.
Right.
But
it would have had casing stones.
It would have had casing stones on top of it.
Correct.
Yeah. So all the blocks we're looking at right here came from the
floor. Were quarried directly from the Giza Plateau. They have the source of the quarries. There are three different quarries on the Giza Plateau.
Really?
Correct. All of the core blocks came from a couple hundred meters away, and they moved them directly into the core of the pyramids.
And what about the granites in the
kitchen? The granite is the only thing that came from Aswan.
Okay, so that's the heaviest shit.
Though. So let me clarify here to be very, very specific. So the core masonry came from local quarries at the construction site. The Tura limestone casing came from Tura on the west side of the Nile River, not very far from Giza. Black basalt came from quarries in Wadin El Faras, which is kind of near the Suez Canal.
How far away?
You know, about it's pretty far. Same distance as Aswan.
Like, oh, wow.
Hundreds of kilometers away. And then the red granite came from quarry in Aswan.
Okay.
But remember, the Nile flows from south to north.
How wide is the Nile?
It was huge. I don't know the exact measurements of the Nile.
So you could throw that shit on a raft?
Of course. And the...
Yeah, that was... This is... it is honestly, when you look at the different sites around the world, I do have to pick it at this one. Why... When they move rocks so far, that is a very weird thing. Oh, thanks, Data Footprints. It is a really weird thing that they move, like with Stonehenge, for example. They got all those blue stones that are there, and then there's like the one that was moved from like 150, I think, 200 miles away, something like that. And it's like, it looks almost identical to the ones right next to it. It looks so much like the ones that are right next to it that they fucking thought it was from the same ones, from the same place, for a long time. So you have to wonder why they would do this. If they clearly, there's some reason. And you want to wonder what the properties of the stone are, to what end that is. But, you know, I will always say that, you know, spiritual significance or something like that is a cop-out, right? This is just, you know, that's just making shit up. Dude, Cameron says, dude.
Quarry, for example, the unfinished obelisk quarry is almost right near the edge of the river. And it's downhill from the quarry to the river.
Interesting.
So there's, again, there's some mythology about, you know, moving these huge obelisks 500 kilometers over mountains. Nothing was ever moved over any mountains in Egypt.
Not here. In Central America is different.
Central America is different. We're talking specifically about the location of the construction materials used in the pyramids.
God damn, bro. Yeah, imagine but throwing all those fucking stones on a raft and floating them down the goddamn Nile. Yeah. That's astonishing.
Huge, huge boats. And not necessarily raft either.
Right. We're talking
boats,
about wooden,
shipping boats.
Well, yeah. I mean, to put.
Nice. You know, I recognize Jeff's frustration right here. He's like, hey, I'm trying to keep this part of it like mundane. This is, I don't think they use high technology to do that. And Danny's like, no, man, they use fucking cranes. Just like, God damn it. I'm going to lose him here. I've been there so many times where I'm like, you know, I don't think they used crazy high technology. And they was like, really? Even when I was on Rogan, that was when, he asked why I don't believe in ancient high technology. He was kicked the tires on that pretty quick. He's like, wait a minute, what? You don't believe in ancient high technology? How come? Hey, there's Timmy. I know that guy. What up, Timmy Bush? 1,100 tons, man. That was my ex. She just left. She wasn't my ex until she left. She doesn't know that yet. Wait till she gets home. Ba-dunch. Hey, had the stage. You got damn.
With giant chunks of stone like that. I'd imagine they're big, flat pieces of wood that they're all built up to float. Yeah, so the Romans had something that's very similar to a pontoon boat, where they have two big flotillas on each side, and the piece of stone that they were moving was put in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you look up Roman stone-moving ships, you can see some images.
Have you seen the Thunderstone, the depictions of how they moved that Thunderstone?
Yeah, they did that with very primitive techniques to move that thing.
It was like tracks.
Stone rollers. Yeah, or not stone rollers, but metal rollers.
Yeah.
All right, now hang on. I gotta jump in. They did not use very primitive techniques to move the Thunderstone. They used metal rollers, but those metal rollers were made out of cutting edge metallurgy. They were the cutting edge bronze or brass, excuse me, and they were casting them on site because they were smashing them over and over and over again. And they used iron screw jacks. A screw jack is a jack that, you know, you screw and it raises or lowers. It's like you might use to lift up a house. And the metal, this was done at a time when they just, structural steel was basically just become a thing. They just started building iron bridges and stuff. And so, you know, this was cutting edge metallurgy was involved in them moving the Thunderstone. So I do have to point out that Jeff is he's missing part of the picture there. It is true that they didn't use like big machines and stuff as far as like motors or winches that were fucking powered by the sun or anything like that. But they definitely used modern stuff at the time.
You would have to.
Sorry, I don't want to spend much time.
Right. But they moved them up the river.
Right.
Down the river.
Because it flows from south to north.
Down.
It flows from south to north.
Correct.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, we're on the same page.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right. Perfect.
Correct. Yeah.
It empties out into the Mediterranean.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. So they were flowing with the current.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, but again, all of the core stones were local quarries on site.
Okay.
Yeah.
At this point in my life, if you open up any of my kitchen cabinets and you find a pot or a pan that isn't hexclad, it's just because I have.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Different perspectives on that. You see, it's funny watching how. You see, you can have a respectful conversation with somebody you disagree with. Like, it's pretty clear that Danny thinks that ancient high tech is more the way to go, but Jeffrey's more of a. You know, it seems to me like I could be wrong, but it seems to me like Jeff's more of got kind of the hippie position on it, where it's more like these people had this technology that was in line with Mother Earth, and we just did all these things to make everybody happy, and everything was they were kind of kumbaya compared to, you know, Danny Rock's Cannibal Corpse t-shirts and shit, right? Let's put it this way: if the two of those guys were because the two of those guys were hanging out with me and we were all eating paper together, I would expect that Jeff would be talking in a few minutes about how we could achieve world peace if we all just found ways to harmonize our frequencies. And Danny'd be going over there going, you know, if you had the fucking hate tank, you could just roll through the corpses of hell. Not that I've ever experienced anything like this in my life. Oh, shit, I'm still muted. My God.
And proof of lightning on the Giza Plateau.
Uh-huh.
So we have a bunch of chemical analysis data and samples that were taken from all around Giza. My hypothesis, again, for the power source of all of these structures around the world comes from below, from telluric currents, and from above, from lightning. It's a two-part power source where the telluric currents provide the initial charge.
Okay.
And then the lightning pushes everything to completion and is the discharge phase of operation. So we have charging and discharging, as above, so below.
Okay.
Okay, so on the Giza Plateau, we have chemical analysis that were taken from the iron veins. And we're getting... So my colleagues at the Acida Project, it's an international research team that took a bunch of samples from 2010 to 2015, about 12 kilograms worth of samples.
Wow.
We're taken from all around
the Acida Project.
I-S-I-D-A. Yeah, shout out to all of my colleagues who will remain nameless at the Acida Project. You know who you are.
Except why do you make them nameless?
Because it's an anonymous research organization.
Like cowboys out there?
Something just... like that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that they have to remain nameless. I understand that it's really frustrating. I'm friends with archaeologists that remain nameless, and that's really frustrating. They'll talk to me and be my buddies, and they'll tell me things, and then they're like, "Yeah, you can't tell anybody that, okay, at all, please," or "You can't talk about that," or "I'm sorry, you can't use my name." And it's like, well, I'm sorry. I don't really know. You can't use that information then, right? I mean, you can use the information, but then it's unverifiable. So I rarely run with it because I'm not saying that there's no evidence there to be looked at. I'm saying that when you can't check the source, it does become a lot. The evidence itself becomes a lot more, a lot more questionable. You have to look under the tires yourself. Oh, Cameron, what are you yelling about? Fuck, shut, fuck. Oh, Jesus Christ, you're just upset, aren't you? Are you watching live or a bit delayed? I'd say I'm watching, the video I'm watching is older, but I'm watching right here again.
And what they did, I would say, is clandestine.
Ooh.
Not necessarily approved, but okay. They did collect samples. So this is one of the sample locations on the Giza Plateau where we discovered silicate microspheres from fulgurites. So fulgurites are fossilized lightning. And this is a close-up image of one of these silicate microspheres. So when lightning hits the ground, the high-voltage electric current surges through the ground and fuses the substrate material. And it produces these branch-like formations called fulgurites.
Right.
So we found fulgurites all over the Giza Plateau, which is direct evidence that lightning was striking on the Giza Plateau.
Well, I mean, not to be a dick, but of course lightning was striking on the Giza Plateau. Lightning strikes fucking everywhere, man. I mean, and the Giza Plateau is flat, so put up a pyramid or something like that. I won't argue that lightning was striking there. The thing is you're going to have to, like, talk about frequency. How much? How often? How consistent? How, you know, it's unfortunate that we don't have more info. It doesn't strike twice, though, but we need more info. I love this channel that much that I'll let the advertisement roll. Oh, well, shucks, Data Footprints. Thanks so much. I love it when people let the advertisement roll. The advertisers love it, too. But it is, it's an unfortunate reality that we can't, you know, we can't ever trust anybody in these things anymore. And I understand that, but everything got so goddamn polarized now that, all right, he's out there collecting samples with his friends that can't say that who they are or where they got the stuff from. So it's ultimately a lot like the guy that I was telling you earlier that was, you know, the hypothetical dude selling his scrolls to Napoleon's boys. He's like, yeah, where'd you want them from? That's where they're from. The same kind of thing. It's like, we can't say for sure. Love you too. What did they capture the power from lightning with? What did they store it in? I think he's saying they stored it in granite or something like that. I have some problems with that. Now, a lot of his stuff might be based on the fact that he's a Electric Universe believer type of guy. It sounds like, I could be wrong, but it sounds to me like he was a Electric Universe theory believer from what he implied. And that would explain why he sees the electricity side of things different, because he's going to see a lot easier to get than me.
Specifically connected to the iron veins that are emanating from the core of the Great Pyramid and the Central Pyramid. So these iron veins have features like vitrification and melting. Mm-hmm. There are fulgurites embedded in these iron veins,
okay,
which is evidence of this high voltage electric current from lightning surging through these veins.
All right. Now, this is exactly, I'll show you some real example of the benefits of having two boneheads, two pyramidians working on the same problem. He's talking about a bunch of lightning, a bunch of iron veins emanating from the pyramid. This is something I'm pretty sure we could prove with some of the data that we could get from satellite information, even, because so it would be an unobtrusive. We could get the data's already there, and we just use like the geological mining type of bullshit. They should be able to look down and see if if an area has been mined, or if an area, has that kind of shit or not. The mining software should, the mining app or whatever should let us see what's there. Now, I'm not sure 100% if we could do it that way, or if we had to fly a fucking LiDAR drone over it or something, but one way or another, there's got to be a way to see that, to find that in the record. It's not just going to be sitting there. Maybe people gain the insight to move rocks from observing rocks move, similar to walking stones. That could be it. That could be it. Make it just like they're like, oh, these rocks work like this if we just over already. So we just see if we can't copy that. All right, let's see what else we got.
So the Giza iron veins are the wiring network that connect all of the structures on the Giza Plateau.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I'll get to the function of the boat pits as circuit breakers here in just a minute when we get to the boat pits.
Okay.
It's also a new hypothesis.
What are the, is that the pits that are on the outside base of the pyramids?
Correct.
Yes. This is what Chris Dunn hypothesizes, that acids or chemicals could have been poured into those things, and they may have fed into the shafts like they go into the crash chamber.
Yeah, so I disagree with that hypothesis, but we are talking about the same features.
Okay.
Yeah, the boat pits.
Got it.
Yeah, I think they're circuit breakers.
Circuit breakers.
Correct. That control the allocation of voltage to different areas. And I've actually mapped the iron veins on the Giza Plateau, and those boat pits are cut into the bedrock in such a manner where they interrupt the veins. They cut right through the veins.
When you say iron veins,
yeah,
what do you mean specifically? Do you have pictures of iron?
Yeah, of course I have pictures of it. Yeah, and we have chemical analysis data, okay, that shows exactly what these things are. So this is just an image that represents the charging and discharge process,
okay,
of telluric currents coming from above, coming from below, and lightning coming from above.
Okay.
So here's a couple of papers. So anybody that's new to my work, right, in the context of my research, I like to provide academic, scientific,
right,
research paper evidence, mm-hmm, that supports all of the claims that I make.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people in the community of alternative ancient history that make wild speculations about the function of the Egyptian pyramids,
yeah,
and they never show any evidence.
Mm-hmm.
There are no research papers. There is no chemical analysis data. There is no academic support for these statements.
Right.
So for me, in each step of the process in explaining this hypothesis, it's important for me to provide academic receipts for everything that I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is the first one regarding telluric currents. So telluric currents are just natural electric currents, mm-hmm, coming from the earth. And they,
yeah, like this, you don't need to have this full. No,
yeah, you don't have to read this. But this paper is saying that there's a direct correlation between the flow and concentration of telluric currents and subterranean natural resources, mm-hmm, like water and metal ore mineral deposits,
mm-hmm,
which is a direct connect.
I disagree with what he said there a bit on the, everybody else is bringing receipts. No, nobody else is bringing the receipts, but what he is, I will guarantee you that you're going to be hard pressed to find an academic that's going to, who's going to sign off on his stuff any more than Randall Carlson's, for example. When it comes to the basic science behind things, most guys bring the receipts, right? Oh, thanks, Cameron. I appreciate that. No, most guys came with the receipts, right? If Randall's talking about the tensile strength of ice, he brings numbers and science and all that. So, Phil the Third, it must be late where you're at. So anyway, my point is that that was a little bit of a inaccurate statement, but it has fuck all to do with his hypothesis.
Connection to everything that we have on the Giza Plateau and all of these ancient sites around the world are built on these subterranean deposits of water.
Right.
Okay. Next paper here: telluric and earth currents, lightning strike locations, and natural resource exploration. So the conclusion of this article states that cloud to ground lightning has a direct correlation to areas where telluric currents flow.
Mm-hmm.
And these telluric currents have a controlling impact. This, right, is a quote directly from this paper, that telluric currents have a controlling impact on lightning strike locations. So what I'm here doing is establishing a case for the connection between telluric currents from below and lightning striking from above. Because there's a direct connection between these two things, right?
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and see, this is where, you would have to really look into this, to dig into this and do a lot of experimental stuff, because, we'll wait and see how he's talking about the question, how do you harness a telluric current, is a very good one. Wait to look and see, like, I'll give you where my mind goes with it anyway. I was playing Dead Island 2 with a friend of mine recently, and there's a dead circuit somewhere where you have to open a door and there's like this broken wire and it's arcing on the ground. And then there's like this other end of the broken wire and it's not arcing, but you can see where you could pour water and then it connects the two. And my mind didn't think of it because you can't pour water on electricity to complete a circuit, right? It's not going to work. But it will in the video game world. And so it just seems to me like the idea of all these connections and stuff, like these vast webs directing and stuff, you know, electricity dissipates, right? Unless you direct it, it just kind of does its thing and falls away. Dan helps give perspective. So does food. Yes. Yes, I do. Would you like some food, Cameron? All right. Jesus Christ. Some people are crazy.
So from below, we have the charging
yep.
that creates charge on the surface of the earth uh-huh. or on the surface of a structure. And then that negatively charged lightning is attracted to the positive charges that are developed by telluric currents.
Right.
There's another important quote here in this. I'm going to quote this directly, that geophysicists have known for decades that there's electric currents in the earth.
Yes.
Right. And these electric currents are modified by natural resources that can be resistive, like freshwater aquifers, oil, gas, and salt,
mm-hmm.
or conductive, like brines, and minerals like copper, iron, lead, zinc, gold, silver, and rare earth.
Mm.
So basically, the paper is saying here that the flow of telluric currents is directly affected by these subterranean natural resources. And the areas where there are more of these subterranean natural resources experience greater concentration and flow of telluric currents.
Right.
So the paper specifically mentions subterranean water sources and metal or mineral deposits like copper, iron, lead, zinc, gold, silver, and rare earths.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this is the Hill of Tara in Ireland, one of the most powerful right. energetic sites in Ireland. You can see the wells all around the site, which are evidence of subterranean springs running below these structures.
Mm-hmm.
All of the stone circles, all of these ancient sites are built on top of electrically conductive subterranean water sources. So water itself, like distilled water, is not an electric.
All right. Now I got a bit of a jump into the water and saying that it's all electric. A lot of these places are built on it because it's water, maybe, right? This is where having the different kinds of thinking helps pierce the veil better, because you put something on the top of water. I mean, yeah, electrical conductivity is a possible reason, but I mean, call me crazy. If push comes to shove, I'm going to be putting water way above electricity on my list of needs. My kid might disagree with me when it comes time to charge his cell phone, but for real though, it seems weird. All right, we'll go about another 15 minutes or so, and then I'm going to get ready to take my munchkin to practice.
Electrical conductor. However, if you have mineral water that's filled with electrolytes, it is a good conductor of electricity.
What about deuterium?
So deuterium, you have to have stuff dissolved into the water. Deuterium, if I remember correctly, is H3O. Is that correct, Steve? Yeah, if I remember correctly, deuterium is H3O, not H2O.
Well, you can get water with like heavy deuterium and water with low, like no deuterium.
Correct.
They can deplete the deuterium.
So I'm not sure about the electrical conductivity of deuterium.
And it has to do with its location on the earth. Like very low deuterium water is found at like the poles, like up close to the North Pole. And then heavy deuterium water is down by the equator.
It's not H3O, it's H2O, but H is
an isotope. Containing a proton and a neutron in this nucleus. But there was a connection between deuterium and those two guys who developed cold fusion, allegedly.
Yeah. So I'm not sure about the electrical conductivity of deuterium as compared to regular water. And what I'm specifically referring to here in the context of ancient sites are natural mineral springs. So it's regular water that has a bunch of dissolved minerals in it, like mineral water, spring water is rich in electrolytes, which make it a very good conductor of electricity.
Mm-hmm.
So again, per this paper, they're saying that telluric currents flow easier and accumulate in areas where there are these subterranean conductive features, like mineral water. So here's a prime example of an ancient site that's built directly on top of these subterranean natural resources.
Mm-hmm.
Conductive water. We have the same thing below the Giza.
Yeah, this is interesting, but you're going to harness that stuff very easily. you're really not going to be harnessing that stuff very easily. Oh no, Michael, Dave's going to be Dave is going to be posting a retraction. He's got 28 days. It's going to be great. It's going to be hilarious, actually. Watching him have no choice but to do so is going to be hilarious. Yeah, it was pretty funny. I thought so too, Diggy. The fact that Professor Dave decided that he was going to dodge out of a debate with me instead pretending that he was going to fight me was just like the funniest fucking thing I ever saw in my life. But I mean, like I said in the video, it's a lot like reminds me a lot of when I was in junior high and that kid that was a little dumb, and I laughed at him in science class. As a matter of fact, he was 2 years older than me, and so he thumped on me a couple of times for it because, well, he was a little dumb. He wasn't going to out argue me, so that's all. Anyway, the idea that you could somehow harness the electrical flow or something, you know, you're just going to kind of jump around the electricity, right? If you've ever seen electricity arc in water, and it just kind of makes a ball. You're going to get the same kind of thing. It's not directed anywhere. You're in water. It's just going to, I mean, maybe it'll follow a tunnel if you're in a tunnel, obviously, but that's about it. You're not really going to be able to direct it.
The plateau.
Okay.
So we have chemical analysis from the water inside the Osiris shaft, and it is brackish water that has tons of dissolved, not tons, but
salt water and fresh water.
Correct. Yeah. It's a mix of salt water and fresh water, which makes it a very good conductor of electricity.
Right.
Not pure water, but mineral water that is rich in salts and electrolytes and minerals. Okay. So the next thing here, Giza Plateau and all the Egyptian pyramids are directly connected to these sources of water. We have the Nile River.
Mm-hmm.
And here's an image comparing the configuration of Giza Plateau and a modern chemical refinery, which are all located directly on the river.
It's crazy how close they are.
It's amazing, right? The comparison between modern industrial chemical manufacturing and the Egyptian pyramids. All these things are built with the same mindset. Because you need
even
a source
in Florida,
of water.
Bro, like all over Florida, you have all these chemical manufacturing plants, and you have all this farmland.
Correct.
They have to build fake irrigation all around it that drains out to the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah, yeah. So the same thing, right? And a lot of the things that we've implemented in our modern industrial scale engineering, in my opinion, can be traced back to the function of the Egyptian pyramids, a la Fritz Haber.
Mm-hmm.
Who visited Egypt? Him and Karl Bosch both visited Egypt.
Explain to people who Fritz Haber is.
Fritz Haber is the guy who.
Hey Dan, are we the giants from the Bible? Maybe, probably not though. I don't think so myself, but I think we're the short ones, right? But I appreciate the super chat there very much, Jess Zeiss. No, I don't think we're the giants in the Bibles though, but I suppose, you know, I don't kick out any ideas like that. You know, people have all different kinds of theories, and a lot of times they come from places that don't make sense to me, but they end up being pretty smart after you look at them for a bit. So you guys won't like this, but I think the reason why we don't understand ancient technology because of spiritual and basis, that's hypothetically possible. Like I said to a girl when I was in Sedona, we were talking about practical magic. And I said, as a skeptic, that my magic was stronger than hers because hers doesn't work on me and mine will stop hers from working. So it's kind of being shitty, but you get what I'm saying. It's like, what is magic? You know, what is spiritual if it doesn't work? Put little Dan on his ass. Yeah, but I'm taking him to wrestling practice, Timmy. He's got to go here before too much longer. You got summer practice for all the wrestlers. Yeah, it's funny how different parts of the country are. Up here in the Pacific Northwest, wrestling's a big deal. But down in the Midwest, nobody gives a shit. Those are your pickup lines. I don't have pickup lines. I just walk in. You guys know who Flava Flav is? I've got this gold chain that I wear, and I put my silver play button on it, and I just strut into a place, and I just pick up all the chicks between the ages of 25 and 40. Yeah, the iron veins thing I am questioning quite a bit. Let's do another clip or two.
Who designed
Nazi.
The Haber process, right? Our modern industrial process for manufacturing ammonia.
Right.
Which there's some very, very close similarities between the modern Haber process and the ancient manufacturing process that created the same product.
Mm-hmm.
The big difference being now we make liquid ammonia, which is super cool ammonia gas. The ancient process made aqueous ammonia, which is ammonia gas dissolved in water. So there's a big difference there.
Right.
Okay, so here's me standing on the Giza Plateau in one of these iron deposits. You see all that red material?
on both sides of the dark stuff? Reddish brown material. Yeah. That is a huge deposit of iron ore. These things are all over the Giza Plateau. Mm-hmm. And we have chemical analysis data from these iron deposits that have rare earths. This is the concentration of the rare earth elements that were found in the boat pits.
Yeah.
So that paper just specifically referenced deposits like copper, iron, lead, zinc, silver, gold, and rare earths. Mm-hmm. We find all of these in the Giza Plateau iron veins.
Wow.
So again, now I'm just establishing a connection between telluric currents, subterranean natural resources, and the location for lightning strikes, because all of these three things are connected.
Right.
Right.
Now, this is where... this is where you need control done, for those of you who know science stuff. So say you're going to say the iron veins in the Giza Plateau, assuming that these are all, everything is above the board here. And so you do your tests and you're like, hey, these iron veins show this percentage of, you know, there's this much copper in them, and there's this much nickel in them, there's this much magnesium in them, and see, okay, well, what does the surrounding soil show? That's a really important one right there, because you know, if the rest of the dirt's very similar, but the only difference is the iron, well, that doesn't really help much, does it? So yeah, these are the kinds of things that these are the kind of things that need done. It's one of the things, honestly, where it's unfortunate that there's this distinct argument between the mainstream and the dreamers, as you could call it, because there's nothing wrong with Jeff's hypothesis fundamentally that I've seen so far, except maybe it's invoking of electricity a few times. But these things could be tested, but there's no, you know, that takes money and it takes somebody willing to put their name on it. And, you know, that's putting your name on something, it could be academic suicide in some of these cases. Was somebody else spamming again? I thought I banned the one spammer. Oh, yeah, I don't see him again. Okay. All right, let's watch a little bit more. Okay, Hawaii has spam even the McDonald's menu. Yes, that is correct.
Right.
Makes sense. Got it.
So also in these iron veins, we have tin, nickel, lead. This one is platinum. This sample has almost 35% platinum. This one is silver. We have different concentrations of silver. This one's 41%. This one's 58%. This one's 70% silver. We also have gold. This one is 7%. This one's 32%. This one's 36%. And we have amalgams of silver and gold, electrum, found in these iron veins on the Giza Plateau.
Wow.
Okay, so now on the Giza Plateau, we have the optimal location for the concentration and uptake of telluric currents mm-hmm. with these iron veins.
Mm-hmm.
The exact
Which
same.
More lightning strikes.
Correct. Directly connected.
Okay.
Okay.
And what was the purpose of the lightning strikes? So they wanted more lightning. Yeah. Well, yeah. What was the lightning doing exactly?
So concentrating electric fields inside of the structure. And I'm going to show you a paper in just a minute that proves that the Great Pyramid itself was designed with the specific geometry to concentrate electric fields in the area surrounding the King's Chamber and the Antechamber.
Okay.
So concentration and storage of electric fields that was induced by lightning. The pyramids,
to create ammonia and sulfuric acid.
Correct. Yes.
Damn. Yeah, I don't know so much about the I don't know so much about the iron veins. I would like to see a map. We'll see as we go through this, but I would like to see very much see a map showing these iron veins and where they're going and stuff, because the electricity is just going to run amok with it. Now, if the boat pits are, like you says, meant to direct it, that's one thing, but you should be able to see this if we were to dig into it and look around. But I think we'll stop here for the day as far as the video itself goes. I'll go ahead and close that down, and we'll just babble for a little bit, and I'll call it here in a few more minutes and see how you guys are doing this fine day. I really appreciate you guys popping in and hanging out with me as always. It's always fun. Appreciate the super chats as always. It's always nice. I'm getting ready, like I said, doing a little bit of traveling. I'm getting ready, actually, on the 16th. I'm going to be flying down, as it says right now, I'm flying down to Phoenix, going from there on a road trip to Austin with Robert, the dude that's the organizer for the Quest for Ancient Civilizations. I'm going to be doing some bar crawling there, fellas. You catch me over in 6th Street in Austin on about the 22nd or so, I'll be fucking killing beers, slaying younglings like a freaking Skywalker. I'll be going nuts. We're talking about pyramids and elongated skulls and scientific hubris. And well, I'll also be cracking some jokes. And it'll be a lot of fun. You guys should come in and hang out. It'll be a whole bunch of fun. Yeah, I'm sorry. For those of you who don't have the money, I apologize. I'm not trying to be a big old butthole. It is going to be enjoyable going out to drink. But yeah, I'm going on a road trip through. So elongated pyramids, exactly. Yeah, just throw comments at me and stuff at points. Let me know what towns you're in as we drive through between Sedona and Austin. We might swing in through your area and stop in and have a beer at your local hangout and yell at people and sing a karaoke song and then beating him up with a stick. Who knows? Never can tell how things are going to go down. And don't forget to go check out my last video where I basically completely put Professor Dave Explains in a box. He's now, he's done. As far as that shit goes, he's going to be apologizing. He's going to be retracting some of the lies that he said soon, one way or the other. Hopefully it won't be too terribly drama laden from here on out, but we'll see. Yeah, I can't wait for it either, Rotten. It'll be pretty hilarious. I'd love to see how he responds. Well, Mark, yeah, I'll be, I'm not sure how far exactly Tucson is, but I'll see. I know we're stopping at some cities and stuff going through the area, driving between the two to promote these events. And, I have a lot of fun going to those kinds of things, going and talking to people. Apparently people buy tickets to come hear me talk with other people. So I make sure and make myself available, like you probably heard me say by now. I don't, I realize that if you want to hear me talk, all you got to do is listen to a couple of ads. But if you want to hang out with me, you'll have to show up at one of these events. So I get that people that show up at these events are doing so to hang out with me. So I try to facilitate drinking, kicking it, listening to theories, discussing ideas. For those of you who want to come up to me and say, hey, I've got this really cool idea, can you pass it to Graham, Joe, Jim, Randall? The answer is no offense. Just pass your idea on to them. And if the answer is, well, they haven't responded to me yet, it's like, yeah, well, that's how that works. I don't want to tell you. We get a lot of these, but I'll talk to you about your idea. Not going to pass it along, but I'll talk to you about it all day long. And no, I don't just go for the beer. The beer just goes because it knows that I'm there. It's like, if you build it, they will come. It's like the Chuck Norris swimming kind of thing. The water just wants to be around him. I show up and the beer just is like, Dan's there. And here it comes. Oh, come on, man. No, I'm sorry. I apologize. All right. You guys are awesome. I really appreciate being able to sit down and bullshit with a bunch of people on a freaking Tuesday afternoon. You guys have a great day. I'll get you a video here. I've got a couple of videos. One on the mounds down in Georgia that have the giant bones in them. Supposedly, we're going to discuss that in a little bit of detail and how the cover-up came to be, or if there was a cover-up at all. And I've also got a little bit of rock throw-in about I was doing a thing about narcissism, looking at the psychology behind certain stuff. And so yeah, we'll check it all out. And yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. I love that science stuff too. Pass all my undying love to Miss October 1986. Miss October 1986. Wait, is that Maxine Legroom? Is that Max Headroom's girlfriend? Is that who that is? Yeah, right. All right, guys. Thank you so much. Love y'all. Throw rocks at your neighbors. Remember that it's not against the law if you don't get caught or something like that. Whatever it is that your mom told you, she was wrong. No, I can't think.